Hello, and welcome to An Aromatic Life. I'm really excited to share this episode with you because this conversation is yet another opportunity for those of us who can smell to learn and to understand more about the lived experience of those who aren't able to smell. And importantly, it's a chance for us smellers to support those who can't smell by helping to bridge the gap in daily life experiences that happen when one sense is not accessible. So if you're a longtime listener of this podcast, you know that last year in episode 50, I had a great conversation with Charlie Atkins, who lives with congenital anosmia. She's never been able to smell, and so, of course, she had a lot of really interesting questions for me about smells, since she's had no experience with them ever in her life. So if you're curious about that conversation, I recommend you go back to episode 50 and have a listen. This conversation is a little different. My guest today is a person who lost her sense of smell, so she lives with acquired anosmia. And what that means is that she used to be able to smell, but can't anymore. And so while she has a concept of olfaction and previous experience with scents before she lost her sense of smell, what's happening is that over time, her understanding of what things smell like is diminishing. And as time passes, smells become distant memories that get harder to tap into. So let me introduce you to my guest, Katie Boateng. Katie is the host of the Smell Podcast, a great podcast, which I highly recommend you check out. She's also the president of the Smell and Taste Association of North America, a patient advocacy group formed in 2020, which aims to improve the quality of life for people with smell and taste disorders. I consider Katie a dear friend, and I always love it when she reaches out to get support for anything related to olfaction. She and I were recently talking, and we thought it could be really interesting and useful to create an episode that helps those living with long-term smell loss, like she does, help them connect with smelling more and find ways to enrich everyday experiences that may be diminished because you have one less sense to access. As you'll learn in this conversation, when you can't smell, you take a much more pragmatic, less emotional approach to everyday activities, like showering or making a cup of coffee, even spending time at the beach, than we smellers do. So as we talk about these everyday activities, I try to help Katie come up with strategies to enrich those experiences for her, make everyday things that we do more emotional, which is what smelling naturally does for those of us who can smell, right? But in her case, doesn't. At any rate, I hope that whether you can or can't smell, you listen to the whole conversation, and we hope you get lots of value out of this discussion. So let's get started. Enjoy my conversation with Katie Boateng. This is An Aromatic Life, the podcast that aims to shed light on our beautiful sense of smell and increase its profile in a culture dominated by sight and sound. My name is Frauke Gallia. I'm a certified aromatherapist and smell coach who spent over 20 years in and around the fragrance industry. What I know for sure after all these years is that our sense of smell is powerful, yet is so underappreciated. There's so much we can do to harness our sense of smell to be well. So join me as I explore this mesmerizing sense from all different angles and learn what it can do for you. Enjoy the show. I want to welcome you back to An Aromatic Life. Katie, thanks for coming back.
Thank you for having me back. I'm so excited to be here again.
Yeah, we're going to be doing something different today. We're both podcasters and we like to interview people. So this is going to be a sort of interview format, a little different. We're going to ask each other questions back and forth, if you will. And I approached you about doing this because whenever you and I talk, you're always curious about what things smell, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Nods her head.
Yes.
You have a hard time remembering smells, which we'll talk about in a minute, and kind of the everyday experiences. And you want to connect with smelling a little bit more and with smells to see if it might trigger memories. Is that
absolutely
right? Would you say mm-hmm. that?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. We'll talk about it in a little bit, but I've been anosmic for quite a while now. Mm-hmm. So definitely always looking to remember what those smells smell like in my life. I'm always interested in learning more about that.
All right, so let's get started then. And I always like to start with anybody who I have on the podcast. I like to ask them just about what the sense of smell means to them. And I thought it would be interesting to get a perspective from you about what relationship you have with the sense of smell today.
That's a great question. So when I was thinking about this, the best answer that I thought of is that it's really complicated. Mm-hmm. I don't have a sense of smell anymore, and I haven't had one for quite a while now. But my life revolves around the sense of smell. So yeah. I am a podcaster. I have the Smell Podcast where I interview people about smell. And I'm also involved with STANA, as you mentioned in the beginning. So the Smell and Taste Association of North America. And so both of those things definitely are really important to me. And they both have to do with not having a sense of smell. So if you would have asked me when I was growing up, what do you want to be when you grow up? I would never have mentioned, oh, I'm going to be a podcaster and I'm also going to help run a nonprofit focused on smell and taste dysfunction.
Yeah.
Right. I would not have told you that because that's not where I thought my life was going. I actually, my background is in education. I was a Spanish teacher and then I transitioned into working in higher education and admissions. And from there, I morphed into a nonprofit leader. And so here I am.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's been a little bit not what I expected. But yeah, the sense of smell for me is definitely something that's complicated. Smell affects so many different areas of a person's life. And so in a way, there's a lot of things that I'm missing. I can give an example, just like safety, right? So your sense of smell alerts you when there's danger in your environment. So spoiled food safety, or maybe a gas leak or smoke, like your house mm-hmm. is on fire. Mm-hmm. Those are all really important triggers. And so that's missing for me. And so it definitely affects my day-to-day life in a lot of ways, not having a sense of smell anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. So tell everybody, maybe we should talk about, like, how long has it been now since you lost your sense of smell?
Yeah. So the best guess for me is that it was late 2008, early 2009. And I don't know exactly when it happened, but I was actually really sick in winter of 2008. It was my first year of college. So that's why I say 2008, 2009, because it was like over that winter break mm-hmm. when you go on break in school. And I had a really bad upper respiratory infection for 4 or 5, maybe even 6 weeks. It was a long time. So it was over break. And then when I was back to school, and then that spring of 2009, at some point, and I don't know when, maybe like February or March, I just realized one morning that I didn't have a sense of smell anymore. And that's really where my journey started. So it's been quite a while. I think I'm 14 years into this now. And just to express to everyone, I don't have a partial sense of smell. I have no sense of smell. So completely anosmic. And I have been since the beginning.
Okay. So you never had moments where you're like, oh, I could smell something. It's a blank slate, basically.
Yeah. So I would say 99% a blank slate, 1% over the past 14 years of what I think is like phantosmia, where I'll get like a sense of a smell, but I could not for the life of me tell you what it is.
Okay.
Like there's an inkling of a sensation.
Yeah.
And it feels really weird because my brain's not used to it anymore. That it does literally stop me in my tracks. One time I stopped and I said to my husband, I was like, is there a smell right here? And he said, no, not that he could tell. And so that has happened maybe 5 or 6 times in 14 years.
Okay. So it feels like a phantom smell almost, but who knows? Yeah. You know, it could be detection. It could actually be detection. You never know.
It could be. Maybe he just doesn't smell well. Like maybe he doesn't have a good sense of smell, yeah. But I've asked him when he's been around, do you smell something here? And he usually says no.
Okay. All right. So before 2008, then, can you remember like what your relationship was with your sense of smell? Did you enjoy smelling things? Was it a part of your life or was it like most people?
It's like most people. I wish I could tell you that I like savored it and I was so appreciative of what I had and now that it's gone and all that stuff. But to be completely honest, I didn't appreciate it. It was just a normal part of my life. And so I didn't pay any special attention to it. I definitely remember growing up with a sense of smell up until I was 18. And I have specific smell memories that really resonate with me now, but I couldn't describe to you what they are. And we'll talk about it, I think, in a little while, but I wouldn't be able to tell you like what something Like I have a memory of rose bushes outside of in our garden when I was young, but I wouldn't be able to tell you, oh, I remember what roses smell like. It's just like a vague memory.
Okay. And you were just living your life, really. And it's
right.
For those who are listening, it's something to be aware of that, you know, I mean, I'm sure many people experienced it during COVID where one minute they had their sense of smell and the next minute it was gone. And, you know, we know how many people went through that and were fortunate enough to get their sense of smell back, but had that moment of, oh my God, right?
Right?
It's gone for a minute. And then others who are still struggling to regain it. So there's a lot of different types of situations out there, but that's helpful to know. Thank you for that background. So should we get started? Should we do this experiment of something really different? So I thought we could have a conversation about everyday smell experiences that you're not able to experience in the same way as us smellers do. And I'm going to ask you a question about how you experience this particular experience. And then I'm going to try to give you guidance by describing it with non-smell words. So this is not a scientific experiment. It's just two people trying to see if we can make connections.
Yeah, I'm so excited.
Yeah, with experience. They're everyday experiences. You gave me a list. So I'm working off of that list you gave me. And that in itself, I found interesting, the list that you gave me, because it gave me an idea of what you're interested in, what you're curious about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm really excited. And just to share with everyone, super grateful that you're even interested in this. And I feel like I'll listen back to this episode moving forward to help me kind of maybe experience these things in a different way. And people will figure out what we're talking about in just a minute.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I do wanted to, before we get started, I wanted to just clarify something. It's not so much scientific, but it is from scientific studies. So I just wanted to bring this up a little bit because maybe if you're listening, you know, you kind of recognize, obviously, that we don't see and then we hear and then we smell. You know, we don't use our senses individually, that we always are using our senses together. So that's obvious, right? But I just wanted to give a few fun examples of psychological experiments that were done just to give people context of why we're doing this in this way. So one of them is something called the Kiki Bauba effect.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard of it?
I have. I've heard of it before. It's super interesting, though. So can you tell everyone what it is?
Yeah. So it's an expression that was coined by psychologists. They were doing some experiments to see what kind of associations people have between certain speech sounds and visual shapes. And it turns out that people associate bauba with a rounded shape and kiki with a spiky shape. Which makes sense in a way, right? Does that make sense to you? Would you make those associations?
Yeah, absolutely. Bauba. Maybe the ba is like a softer sound for a round shape and the ka is like sharp.
Exactly. So they did this around the world and it's universally, you know, the same. It doesn't really depend on certain cultures. So that I thought that was interesting. And then there's another one that was interesting. So let me ask you, if you had to put lemons on a scale between fast and slow, where would you put lemons?
Oh, I think they're fast.
Exactly. That's what most people around the world say, is that lemons are fast. Now, how about bananas?
Yeah, they would be slow.
Exactly. So what fixes that association in our brains, right? It's kind of fun. Scientists think it might be the sour taste receptors on our tongues that are activated quickly. Sweet taste receptors activate more slowly. So the acidity of citrus fruits has a faster acting effect than the sweetness of a banana.
Well, I'm glad I passed the test.
Oh, gosh. Oh, no, you were nervous, huh? No.
My brain is in sync with the rest of humanity. So that's
Yes. See, there you go. So you've still got your other four senses and they're working perfectly well.
Yeah.
Syncing up perfectly well. So these are just examples of cross-modal associations. I thought that was just a little fun thing to do to get us primed for what we're going to try to do here. So let's get started. You gave me a list and we're going to start with taking a shower. So this is a great one because we all do this every day, right? Or maybe not, you know, hopefully every day, but we do this often. We wash our hair with shampoo. We clean our body with soap or body wash of some sort. And you gave me, I asked you in this case, you know, for what it is that you use, because that would help me describe what a shower experience would be like, right? Everybody uses different shampoos or soaps or body washes, and they all have different smells. So I did ask that. But before we get started with me describing that, I want to understand, and I want the listeners to understand. So today, when you take a shower, what is that experience like for you?
Yeah, so it's perfunctory, I would say, more than anything. I don't typically find myself taking a shower for extended periods of time to relax just for that purpose. Okay. Usually in my life, I'm taking a shower because it's time to take a shower. Yeah. I like the warm water, so that's always great. I think I enjoy that part of the shower the most, is that hot water. And sometimes I will linger there to let the hot water go over my shoulders and stuff, because maybe my shoulders are tight or my muscles are sore. But for the most part, I just get in and get out.
So it sounds like you just work with the water, but do you ever think about the suds of the shampoo or nothing like that?
Not really, because okay. I can't smell them. So it's like we'll talk about this in another area, yeah. But it's like how eating is just more perfunctory for me. Okay. So all like right. A shower is like a perfunctory thing. You okay. have to go shower because you're dirty. And it's time to get clean. And so you're going to go in there and wash your body, wash your hair, wash your face, you know,
okay.
wash all your nooks and crannies, as my mom would say, get all cleaned up and then you get out. So yeah, for me, I don't really connect much with showering.
Maybe we can change that slightly.
Yeah.
If you want to, really, you don't have to, but it's interesting because to me, it sounds like you're doing many of the everyday things in just a very pragmatic, like you said, perfunctory way. It's not, you don't take more out of it because you believe the connection to smell is kind of what would give you a more enriched experience. But I'm going to argue that we can find ways to give you connections, even if right now you can't smell.
Yeah, I mean, think about bubble baths, right?
Yeah.
I think that most people, I'm going to assume here, but I think most people would enjoy a bubble bath because they have fancy bubbles and nice smells and those mm-hmm. kinds of things going on. For me, like a bubble bath, I don't use bubbles, I guess, for the first thing. So I would just take a bath. I use Epsom salt. So again, baths for me are super like task oriented. I'll take a bath because I weightlifted really hard and my body is sore. So it's time to take a bath and use Epsom salt because that's going to make my body feel better. Mm-hmm. But I'm not lingering there because of the smells and stuff. It's more like a soak because it will make my body feel better.
It's functional, not experiential. Yeah. It's not emotional. It's not emotional. It's very matter of fact. Got it.
Yes, exactly.
But then I'm going to ask you a question. How does taking a shower make you feel right now? Bored. It sounds like it's bored.
Yeah, I don't know if I have a feeling associated with it.
Okay.
More of a time to think about my to-do list.
Yeah.
Productive, maybe?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Productive.
That's good. Do you have any memory of the olfactory experience of taking a shower?
I think it's similar to all of my memories.
Okay.
Of olfaction is that it's there and I can sort of think about how it made me feel, but I can't relive it in my head. I have memories of bubble baths when I was little or smelly soaps and shampoos and stuff and like enjoying them. But no, I don't have a very vivid memory of those things anymore.
Okay.
Wow. So I'm curious to know this part I'm super curious for. So can you describe the smell of the shampoo that I sent you, using non-smell words to enhance the imagery of the experience? So I use Redken Volume Injection Shampoo and Conditioner. It's in a pink bottle.
Okay. So I went to the store to smell this since I'm not going to go out and buy every single product, but I went to the store. So I didn't experience in the shower, but just to give you a little background. So when I worked at Fragrance House for 10 years, my categories that I worked on were shampoo, so the hair care market, and the deodorant market.
Nice.
So that was very helpful here today because at least I know enough to know how the difference is. Like when a lot of people decide on what shampoo they're going to use, not only what it says on the bottle or maybe the color of it, but also they might open the cap and smell it. And that's called smelling it neat out of the bottle. So that's what I was doing at the store. And then obviously when you use it in the shower in combination with water and only a little bit, that's in bloom. So that's what I will try to describe based on what I smelled neat.
Oh, that's fascinating. Okay, cool.
Okay. So here we go. So for me, that Redken shampoo smelled very sweet, creamy, but it was a kind of creamy that was more of a whipped cream, like as if you would feel it in your mouth, like whipped cream.
Interesting.
And it smells a little matte, so it's not shiny. Like if you have a photo, you know, it's more of a matte look. It's bright. It could be the color pink, just like the bottle, interestingly enough. So I made that association. And thin. So it's a thin smell.
Interesting.
And it smelled slightly far away because it was thinner. So it's not a very in-your-face kind of smell. And it has a cooing sound. It's very delicate. And it has a powdery feel. So as if you were to take talcum powder and touch it.
Yeah.
It has a powdery feel to it. And it was slightly cool in temperature. And the temperament, I always like to give it a personality. It was cheerful.
Oh, that's good.
Does that give you a little context?
That's great. Yeah. I think that's wonderful. Yeah. Those are some words I can think of.
So a person who could, like in the fragrance industry, when I was, you know, working on these things, we would simply describe it as a very feminine floral rose. And that doesn't mean anything to you.
Right.
Right. So that was my point, is to try to get away from these common fragrance terms that we use, which is just floral rose. Like, what would you do with that expression? So I'm trying to use all the other senses to bring more context and dimension. So
that's wonderful. Okay. So the next one I want to ask you about is the body wash. Mm-hmm. So it's skin calming body wash. It's similar to Aveeno skin relief body wash. What did you experience with that one?
Okay, again, so actually, I did buy this one. I'm like, you know what? I needed a body wash. I'm like, I'm going to take it home with me. So that one I did buy, I was at Target. It's the Target brand, right?
Yeah, and, Target brand.
But the thing about this one is that it's fragrance-free.
Ah, okay.
So another little behind the scenes about that is when these companies create products, they have a base formula. So it's the cleansing ingredients, right? To actually cleanse your body and to create foam and all of that. And then they add fragrance on top usually. In this case, because it says fragrance free, it means they didn't add any fragrance ingredients and they just basically created the base of the cleanser and all, you know, all the ingredients to clean. And it was a pretty good smell. It wasn't, I mean, it was very subtle. It's like almost nothing. You can't really smell anything. Neat, you could smell a tiny bit at the store, but if you use it in the shower, which I did, it has no smell.
Okay, really, that's great then. Yeah. So it's the perfect body wash for anosmics.
Exactly. Fragrance-free. I want you to know there's also something called unscented. Sometimes products are called unscented. Uh-huh. And what that means is that they actually add fragrance maskers. So fragrance ingredients that mask, you know, maybe it's a really bad smelling base, like a cleaner or this and that. In your case, that Target body wash had a pretty decent smell, so they could say fragrance free.
Gotcha.
But in many cases, they need to mask that the god-awful smell of the base, and then it's called unscented.
Interesting.
So that's a difference. So it still might not smell in the shower, but they might use some fragrance ingredients. Okay.
That's great. Okay.
A little added bonus information.
That's fascinating to me.
Yeah. So you asked me about a lotion as well. And even though that wasn't a shower experience, I thought when you come out of the shower, it's kind of holistically part of the whole experience of taking a shower and afterwards putting cream on your body. So I did evaluate that one, even though, again, this is just neat out of the bottle. I didn't buy this one. So, but it's usually lotions that you smell in the bottle and then on skin, they're fairly similar. So let me try to describe this one. So it's an enriching shea butter. So here again, it's sweet, it's creamy, but more full bodied. So imagine in your mouth, it really takes up your whole mouth. Yeah. Mm. So that's how I describe full bodied from a taste perspective. Then visually, it smelled very symmetrical, long, but rounded. So not edgy or anything. It's very round. If I had to pick a color, it would be brown, maybe. So a little bit more, a darker color, and thick. Mm. It smelled near, like a purring sound, which is nice, like a kitten purring. And if you had to touch it, it smelled very fluffy and had a cottony feel.
Okay? It's pretty interesting because I would say that a lot of that resonates with me. It's accurate. It is like a thicker lotion when you put it on.
Mm-hmm.
So, and really great.
Yeah, I think. And again, this is why these are cross-modal experiences. So when I smell that, and I've used plenty of lotions that have shea butter in them, so I'm probably already making that association in my head of how it may smell when I'm putting cream on my skin and all that. You know, I'm making those associations, which is why my descriptors are very similar to what you experience even without smelling it. So temperature-wise, it smelled balmy and had a temperament that was confident.
Yeah.
Kind of like it walks into a room and says, yep, I know who I am. Very That's confident. Wonderful. And it gives you a feeling of vacation because it has a coconut smell. For those who can smell, that means more. But because I think the taste of coconut is very different to the smell of coconut, but like a tropical smell.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's great. Thank you.
All right. So those are the three products we have there. So let's think about how we can take your shower experience now and enrich it a little bit more, right? So when you go into the shower and the next time you shampoo your hair, I want you to kind of think about those things. I want you to even pay attention to any foaming that happens, like the touch aspect of it. Look at the visual, see how little bubbles might land on your arm or something. You know, see if you can make the experience a little bit richer. And now that you know this is a very delicate, feminine, you know, bright smell, maybe think about it a little bit more. I don't know.
Yeah. And I actually have an in-shower Bluetooth speaker, so I could just play that part while I take a shower.
Oh, how interesting. Yeah, we can do that. Would be very interesting. I'd love to know what that experience would be like.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a suction cup speaker. You turn it on and it connects to your phone. And that's, I listen to podcasts while I shower too.
Oh, very cool. Good, good. Yeah. And then the body wash, in this case, it won't have a smell. But afterwards, when you get out of the shower and you put your shea butter on, think about a vacation that you had, maybe by the beach.
Yeah, that's great.
Cool.
Thank you.
All right. So should we go on to the next one? The next one you wanted to know about was rose bushes.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us why you wanted to know about rose bushes. I think you had some background on that.
Yeah. So I mentioned before the rose bushes in our garden. So we, in our house where I grew up in Mountain Home, Idaho, my brother lives in that house now, which is kind of cool. So when I go back to visit, I go into the same house. And now my nieces and nephew have our childhood bedrooms, which is kind of fun too.
Wow.
So right outside my niece's bedroom, which used to be my bedroom with my sister, there used to be a really huge rose bush. And I think it's gone now. They've replaced it with something else. But that is where most of my memories of roses come from. It was really fragrant outside of that window. So if you open the window, you could really smell the roses. And then I also used to just go out into the front yard and pick the leaves, pick a petal off of the rose, and then I would smash it in my hand and smell it. And then you could see the juice from the rose, like smashed into your hand. So yeah, I remember doing that often with the rose bushes.
See, you are having olfactory experiences.
Yeah. Whether I knew it or not.
Exactly. So if you were to go there right now, what would that experience be like for you? So just to help people who can smell to understand what an experience of, you know, being around a rose bush now is for you. What is that like?
I mean, it's sort of boring. I'm going to keep repeating that, but it is, It's more visual, obviously. Yeah. So I like, it's beautiful looking. I can appreciate the roses from like a visual aspect. Mm-hmm. Maybe touching them. I don't often do that because I don't like picking flowers anymore. Like, I don't want to hurt the bush or hurt the flowers, and I don't intend to take them home. So I usually just don't pick leaves or anything anymore. But I assume that if I were to like touch it, the petals would be soft. They're almost velvety.
Yeah.
And there's usually like prickles. I don't know if thorns, like there's thorns on rose bushes. So sharp, it would remind me of like sharpness. Mm-hmm. That's how I would experience it now, is just looking at it and perhaps touching it.
See, already it's not boring. It could be lots of different colors. It could, you know, that I think you could delicately touch the petals without hurting it. It's almost like you're, you know, saying hello.
Right.
And just appreciating. I mean, roses are really beautiful, just their layers alone, right? So
I also, besides rose bushes, just have a lot of memories of roses from high school dances. So my boyfriend would always bring me a small bouquet of roses for each dance. So I used to just like really like that. And then I would hang them upside down in my room until they dried out, and I'd keep them for a long time. And then eventually I would get rid of them. But yeah, I would have them for quite a while.
Very good. Very good.
So I'm curious if you can express to me, using all these great words, what is a rose bush like now, using non-smell words?
All right, here we go. I'll give it a try. So I have to repeat again, this is another sweet smell. I mean, most things that we enjoy are sweet, to be fair. This is lightly creamy. The smell is just lightly creamy with a little spicy tinge. Interestingly enough, there's a little bit of spice in there. Visually, it again smells more matte. It's not a very bright, alive smell. It's a little bit more matte. It's very balanced. It's also long and round and thin. The smell is a little bit far away to me because, unfortunately, most roses today, because I go on walks every single day and I'll smell things along the way, and roses today don't have the smell that they used to. Just the way they're bred, and a lot of hybrids. A lot of them are just bred for their color these days. And many roses don't even have a smell that I could detect, or it's just so faint. It's like I'm just digging deep to see if there's any kind of smell. So in general, it's...
My rose bush experiences are from the 90s.
Yeah. So maybe I'd love to know from people who are listening if they have better rose experiences. So you also have to make an effort to plant roses that have a distinct smell. Mm-hmm. And most people just, you know, plant things that they can get easily, readily available. And those are for visual appeal in a garden. So, yeah.
It's interesting.
So, yeah. So it's much more of a faraway smell that you have to go up close to get an impression. And then when you get there, it's like a little humming sound. It smells silky and smooth. It has just a slightly bumpy feel. You know, the scent will change ever so slightly. So that's why I make it like a bumpy smell. And it smells snug temperature wise, you know, very appealing, and you just want to snuggle up with it. And the temperament to me is very serene. Just
that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like friendly almost.
Yeah. So that's the rose bush for me. If those things make sense to you and you can kind of gauge that, I would ask the next time you come across roses, maybe to appreciate the colors more, interact with it. Maybe you don't have to go ahead and, well, I mean, you can go through the process of smelling it if you'd like and just think about the words that I described. Mm-hmm. But also, I hope that you'll connect with it because you just said, you know, it's kind of boring. I don't know why I would do it. And I would just encourage you to, you know, appreciate those roses for its visual appeal, touch it ever so slightly just to say hi. Notice that velvety touch a little bit.
Reconnect with the rose bush. I'll make it a plan.
All right. So the next one is eating strawberries. Mm-hmm. So this is a different experience, right? Now we're not just smelling it. And unless you have the freshest of fresh strawberries, the ones in the grocery store, don't smell as such. Okay. It's so sad because of all the transportation and this and that. I mean, I'm here in a part of California, not too far from where strawberries come from. So I'm kind of lucky in the farmer's market you can get in the summer. They just smell incredibly sweet. But eating it is a different experience. So I was trying to recreate, what would the full flavor, right? But first, before I describe it, tell everybody what the experience of eating a strawberry is like for you right now.
So it's either sweet or sour, because sometimes they're more sweet, sometimes they're not maybe as ripe, and so they're a little bit sour. It's cold, usually, because we put our strawberries in the fridge. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that doesn't help with how they smell, but we just tend to keep them there for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And so mostly it's cold, sweet or sour, and like crunchy-ish. Like the initial bite is typically a little bit crunchy. That's how I experienced them today.
You notice the little seeds, the texture of the seeds when you're crunching in?
Not as much, I don't think.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're not paying attention to that part.
Probably
fair
not.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Okay.
But my son really likes strawberries, so we have strawberries around a lot. Sensorily, I guess, if he's eating them, then I just am visually watching him because he has the little toddler cutting board and toddler knife. So I think that's fun because he's really pleased with himself when he cuts a strawberry and then eats it. So that's fun. That's another sensory experience, is watching him and seeing how he's doing it. I'm curious, can you describe strawberries the same way that you have been, like using these non-smell words?
Okay, I'll try. So when I bite into a strawberry, the flavor to me is, as it is with you, it's very sweet, but there's kind of like a jamminess that comes through. So it's a little bit more thick, I guess. And like you, it's, well, for me, it was slightly sour too, sometimes depending on how ripe the strawberry is. Visually, I would say the flavor is bright. It's balanced. It's long, a little bit rectangular. It's got a little bit of edge to it. And it's quite a thick smell when you're there. Sound-wise, the flavor is near. It's sloshing, maybe a little wave-like, because the flavor comes through as you're chewing, right? Uh-huh. And so then those molecules go up through the inside of your nose. So to me, there's a little bit of a wave coming in and out of smell, or of flavor, I should say. And then also I put crunchy, maybe fleshy feel as far as touch. The temperature is also cool to me, a little breezy. And the temperament is cheerful. Because the flavor of strawberries, it's cheerful. It's a nice experience.
I think that one resonates too. They definitely seem a friendly fruit for some reason.
Exactly. So I guess just keep that in mind when your son's eating, if you take a bite. I want you to connect with the color a little bit. That's why a lot of people associate red with sweetness, interestingly enough. It's quite a common feel. And then just take in the crunchiness. Know that it has kind of a wavy flavor feeling. So just keep those things in mind, I guess.
That's great. Thank you.
Sure. And then you also wanted to know about cutting an orange.
Yeah. Again, this is something I do often, both for myself and for my son, whether it's cutting one or peeling like the little mandarin oranges. Mm-hmm. For me, it's right now, without a sense of smell, sometimes if you cut it, it's almost like a sound. Like there's almost like a ch sound, because you can see.
Yes.
The stuff come out of the orange. So that's kind of cool. If I am paying attention, I always appreciate that a little bit. And I'm always curious, like, that must be a lot of the molecules that are going up into people's noses are coming from that. But it's cool that you can like visually see it.
Yes.
As far as peeling it goes, usually it makes your fingernails dirty.
Yeah.
So like you always have to wash your hands after.
Yeah.
And I'm sure like your fingertips smell like orange after that. But yeah, that's how it is for me right now, is I mostly focus on that visual, smell. I don't even know, molecules, yeah. The juice, whatever that is that like pops
out.
Yeah,
it's like a spritz of juice almost. Yeah. Yeah.
And the sound of it, for some reason, it makes like a shh sound in my brain. Yeah. And then having to wash your hands because your hands are dirty, like your fingernails are dirty from peeling it.
Yeah.
So the things I focus on. And then eating it. I know we're not going to get into that exactly, but the eating it is just like sweet, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe a little sour.
Okay.
You describe the orange.
Well, first of all, before we do that, sorry, I wanted to just ask you, how does that make you feel as you're cutting? I mean, is it is it just kind of a matter of fact thing, or do you take a moment to, this one you described a lot more to me than the others.
Yeah.
So it seems like you're more connected to
them. I
think
if I stop and think about it, overall, it's sad.
That one is sad. Okay.
A little bit, just because there are certain things that point out for me more often when I stop and pay attention that I don't have a sense of smell anymore. And I think that the orange is one of them, because you can see it. And it's, hey, I used to know what that was like. So every once in a while, that one will be a little bit sad. But for the most part, I think it's more, again, a matter of fact task.
Okay.
Cutting it to get to the fruit, or peeling it to get to the fruit.
Very good. You don't have any memory from before 2008 of oranges in your life, do you? Like
I can remember enjoying them and the smell of them when you do peel it. I can sort of remember that it was like a fresh sensation.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Like in elementary school, we would always put the orange slices in our teeth.
Yes.
And like stare around at each other, because that was really fun. I don't know why kids do weird stuff. But yeah, I remember, I have memories of doing that.
Okay, that's good. I like that. See, that's fun. She's smiling. All right. So then let me describe it for you. All right. So I did cutting an orange, not so much peeling it, because to me, when you cut it, it gives you, like you said, because there's a bit of a spritz that happens, and it kind of like, it's a hard, whereas when you peel, you still have a lot of the white pith on the outside, and you have, you know, it's not unless you eat it that you really get that flavor burst. So this is cutting an orange, all right? So it's sweet, a little tangy, and juicy. It smells bright, shiny, radiant, and sparkling. So imagine that. It smells near, because as soon as you cut, that scent just bursts right into the air. The volatiles of citruses, they're very volatile, so they really hit your nose quickly. So that's why it's very a near smell. And it has a splashiness to it, what you said. It does have a softness to it and a sheerness, like as far as touch goes, because citrus smells typically aren't very heavy. You know, roses are a little bit heavier. A citrus smell is a softer, more sheer. And temperature-wise, it smells mild. So it's not cold or warm. It's just kind of room temperature mild. And the temperament is totally optimistic. I think the orange smell, more than a grapefruit or a lemon smell, I mean, orange to me is very optimistic.
That's great. Thank you.
Cool.
I'll have those in my mind next time I cut open an orange.
Yeah. I mean, connect with that splashing, the spritz when you cut the orange. I think that could be fun. All right. The next one is brewing a pot of coffee. What a common thing. So this is just the aroma of it, not drinking the coffee.
Right. Yeah. So I do this every morning. So I'll come out and I will make a cup of coffee. I have a single cup coffee maker. So it's just like one cup at a time instead of a big coffee pot maker. My parents have those, and like we grew up with that.
Yeah.
Shared pot.
Yeah.
Nowadays, I think it's more common to have like a single cup.
Yeah.
So I'll make a cup of coffee in the morning, and right now I'm using like Starbucks, like a light roast coffee. I just picked it out because someone told me like light roast has more caffeine than dark roast. I don't know if that's true or not.
And you need
and I like the bag. I like the way that the bag looks. But yeah, so I usually am, I think of this as being almost a tired feeling because it's the first thing I do usually in the morning. Like one of the first things I'll walk out and make the cup of coffee. So I'm usually tired and waking up. And yeah, I don't know. I don't have a lot of other.
Does it, you know, when you have those, I guess, because you, I didn't know this, that it was just a single cup, but when you have those, I kind of went off of your standard percolating, you know, like one of those bigger ones that makes a whole cup that you might have in an office space. So sorry, I went for that, but I was thinking
that's okay.
That also, sometimes you can hear that from far away, just the percolating of that. So the sounds of that, right? Like it's
yeah,
it's
this
working.
One makes like tiny dripping noise.
Okay.
As it goes into the cups, you can hear it. So yeah, that's usually I guess I would say like the noise of it.
Okay. How does, you know, brewing a pot of coffee make you feel? Does it make you feel anything other than tired? I mean, does it make you, you know, for a lot of people who, and I would ask you actually, did you ever have coffee before? I mean, you might not have.
Before. I did. Yeah. We grew up having coffee. So probably a lot earlier than we should have had coffee. So when I was like 14, 15, maybe started having some coffee every once in a while because my dad is a big coffee drinker. So I think it makes me feel good. Like it's a good morning ritual, good morning
routine.
So
it is a ritual for you nonetheless, even though, because a lot of people associate it with the smell that it's a ritual. It's, oh, but I like that. Sounds like you connected with it before.
Yeah.
So for you, it became the ritual before, you know, so that's good. Association was already created.
I would love to know if you could describe coffee for me, because I do have memories of walking into a coffee shop or making a coffee pot at home where it's a very warm smell. So I'm curious to see how you would describe it.
Yeah, you're not far off. Good memory. By the way, coffee shops, like you go to a Starbucks or any of these places now, they have no smell.
Oh.
It's so sad because their machines are made in such a way that the smell doesn't come across. There's no,
oh,
it's,
weird.
It's more the smell of the other things that they make there and throw in those quick ovens. You know, if you want one of those sandwiches or something,
okay.
You can smell that more. But yeah, there's not much.
Interesting.
The traditional coffee shops, yes, they probably have a smell, but
yeah, that's good to know.
Which is sad because I think that's part of, you know, that would make people linger there a little longer. But
yeah.
Who knows? All right. So the smell. So it smells, depending on the roast, obviously, but it smells a little caramelized. So it has that little caramelized sweetness and it's a little gritty because I always like to think of the mouthfeel. So it's a little tiny bit gritty. Visually, it would smell very deep, wide, round, dark. And again, a matte visually kind of smell, not so much a shiny smell. Sound-wise, it smells very near. So it's very diffusive, right? It's right there, that coffee smell. And also would sound like it's purring a little bit. It's a really nice purring consistent smell. It smells soft and cottony. That's the feel it would have. Temperature-wise, it smells warm and snug. And the temperament for me is, again, it's totally confident. You know, as it comes and fills the space, it lets you know it's there and present. So it's a very confident smell.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you.
All right. The next one was being sweaty on a hot day.
Mm-hmm.
You live in a very warm part of the country. It's been very hot.
And we're new here, so it's been extremely hot and very overwhelming for me how hot it's been. Mm. And I grew up in Idaho, which is hot. It has its distinct seasons. There's the definite four seasons, but it's really cold and wintry in the winter, and it gets really hot in the summer. But there is something different about living in Texas, and the humidity plus the heat is what makes it really overwhelming. So being sweaty on a hot day is something that it's finally cooling down now that we're like in the middle, almost getting towards the end of September. But June, July, and August were terrible and really hot, like 110. So definitely very sweaty, lots of clothing changes for me. And as someone with anosmia, I don't typically worry about how I smell, like my body.
Yeah.
Anymore. And I don't know if that's just because I don't care anymore or if I'm just like confident enough in my like hygiene routine that I'm like, I probably don't smell and it's fine. But thankfully, it's not something that I fixate on. I'm not overly concerned with it. Yeah. I don't have a lot of anxiety about it. But living here and like this summer, I was definitely like, ooh, I wonder if I smell bad. So that's something that I'm curious about is the body odor, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, right now when you experience sweatiness, like, you know, so much of, for me, when I experience sweatiness, it is that scent cue or that odor cue, I should say. It's not a pleasant scent. So not having that smell part of it. So is it more the touching, the feeling, like how it, like the physical visual of seeing sweat, or what is it?
Yeah, I think it's the physical feeling of it because your hairline is sweaty. Maybe your neck is sweaty. You have to have your hair up. There's literally no point of makeup here. I see people who are super well put together and I don't understand how that works. Maybe you just have to acclimate. You just have to get used to it. But for me, literally, I had on a full face of makeup one day, went outside for maybe half an hour, and I had mascara lines just running down my cheeks because I was so hot.
Yeah.
And I don't understand how people wear makeup here. So yeah, sensorially, it's just definitely in my body, very hot. Your armpits are sweaty. Your whole body is sweaty. You have chest sweat, just sweat everywhere, right?
Yeah.
So that is what it's like for me, is more of a physical feeling.
Okay. That's definitely there too. But let me bring in the element of the odor. Uh-huh. Let me describe that. And that just, I think, adds to the discomfort and yuckiness.
Yeah. And I would say, like I mentioned before, usually I don't really worry about it. But when I was here, I was like, I don't know if I stink. Because I think we're going to talk about this one in a little while, so I won't get into it too much. Mm-hmm. But I typically wear natural deodorant. I'll wear Lumi or something like that, mm-hmm. because it doesn't have aluminum in it. Mm-hmm. But if it's really hot, like all, and that one doesn't prevent you from sweating. It's just supposed to help control odor. So the sweatiness feeling here is so overwhelming that I just switched back to a regular deodorant because I was like, I don't want to be that sweaty.
Yes. I don't want to feel that all day.
Yes.
Yes.
The natural deodorant does not cut it here.
Yeah.
I don't know about smell wise. Again, my husband didn't ever say, wow, you really stink. But just feeling wise, I just switched back to regular deodorant.
And that's all part of the experience. That's why we're having this conversation. But it's really interesting for me to hear what your experience is like without the smell part of it, you know?
Right.
So, and that's very helpful. Thank you. So let me describe how I would describe the odor part. And again, there's lots of variations depending on what you've eaten. You know, things pour out of your sweat glands differently if you've had a lot of garlic that day than, you know, just normal sweat if you've just eaten, I don't know, vegetables or non odoriferous things. But I'm just going to give you a general feel, because this one in this case would be, it smells a little bit salty and fatty from a taste perspective. Visually, if you were to smell it, it would be a heavy smell, very angular, twisted, waxy looking. This is waxy looking, even reflective. You feel like it comes back at you constantly. It's like this tension, just not a pleasant smell. And it smells very much, the sound is in your face. It's very close up. It's like a barking smell, you know, like when you hear a dog barking, that can get aggravating after a while.
Right.
For a touch perspective, it smells prickly and even lumpy at the same time. Temperature, it's humid and moist. And then temperament wise, it's somebody who's really aggravating. It's just somebody who you don't want to have around. Right.
And I don't think we got to this one, but I have a very vivid memory of this because I played sports in high school. So I think one time, and like I said, I don't think I often smell bad because I typically like wash my body regularly, but we went to a softball tournament and we were outside playing softball all day. And I remember being on the bus going back home and just being like revolted at a smell. And I was like, oh, what is that? And it was me.
Oh.
And I didn't typically stink. And so I was like, oh my gosh, that is horrid. So I think I just showered as soon as I got home. But every time I would move on the bus, I would get like a whiff of myself and just be so grossed out.
And that was strong enough to remind you. That's so
my friend was with me and she's, oof, you stink. But so, yeah, I wasn't like, that was fine because I did smell, but I was just like, I felt so bad for her. And it was not a common experience. Mm. I played sports a lot, but I would always just shower. And I think it was the fact that it was a tournament. So you played a game, you waited around a couple hours, you played another one, you waited around.
Yeah.
Maybe a third one. And then you went home. And so all of the drying and re-sweating, it was just not a good experience.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the really extreme sweating. You know, there's the everyday sweating and then there's the more sporty sweating or living in a humid environment sweating. So it varies. But, you know, hopefully we gave people an idea what it was
like. Yeah. Thank you.
Good. The next one you wanted to know about was, we just kind of lumped them together, baking bread, cookies, or a cake. I kind of focused on cookies and cake because they're more similar. Bread is a little bit different. And
right.
Not everybody bakes bread, but I think a lot of people might bake cookies or cake. So
yeah,
I focused on that, if you don't mind. So do you bake any cookies or cake now?
I do. Yeah. Good. So I can cook and I can bake. I do most of them as a, not to ad nauseum repeat myself, but most of them are as a function of needing to eat something or wanting to eat something sweeter. I try to have in my life this unwritten rule where if I want something sweet or like a cake or a cookie, that I should make it myself, because then if I really want it, I'll go through the effort of doing it.
That's good. Yeah.
Versus just buying them. I still buy them sometimes. But I do try to do this where, okay, if you really want a cake, are you willing to make it?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And if you're willing to make it, then you deserve to eat however much cake you want. So that's kind of what I do. But as far as my sensory experience of it, it's mostly visual, like seeing pouring the ingredients, cracking the egg and putting it in, adding the different salts and, you know, those things that you need, sugar, flour.
Yeah.
So I don't make frosting from scratch when making a cake. I always just buy a can of frosting. Yep. I know how to make frosting, but I don't want to. I think it's a lot of work.
You ever taste the batter?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So tasting out the batter. I always lick the spoon when it's done. Mm-hmm. So now I really enjoy when making cookies, or I don't make cake as often, but I do make cookies probably pretty regularly, is I will enjoy watching Kwame help me because he's super messy. And so he'll help me pour the one cup of flour, is half of it is on the floor. So we just kind of eyeball it and add another half, you know. I'm not super picky about stuff like that because it all comes out in the end to be pretty fine.
Yeah.
If it's over a cup, that's fine. If it's a little under a cup, that's fine. But yeah, I enjoy visually that experience now, is like him helping me to make the item. So that's kind of what I do.
Good, good. How about any memories from when you're young? Can you think of any of the smells?
I have good memories of this. So my mom is a good baker. And so she would bake stuff, and she's the one who taught me and my brother and sister how to cook and bake things. So I have good memories of baking cakes. One in particular is my sister's birthday cake was always an Easter bunny, because her birthday is around Easter. Uh-huh. So you make two round sheets, and then you cut one of them into bunny ears.
Yeah.
And then you decorate the cake, and there was always coconut involved to be his fur, you know?
I love it.
And jelly bean pies. Yeah, things like that. And food coloring. You had to make the food coloring. So yeah, I have good experiences, good memories of baking cakes and cookies. And polvorones. I don't know if you know Mexican wedding cookies.
No, I don't.
They're really good. So I don't know exactly what they're made out of. I don't remember. But they're tiny, small balls of cookies. And then you have to let them cool. And then you dip them in powdered sugar. So you put them in a bag of powdered sugar and shake them, and they're covered in powdered sugar.
Okay.
And so I really like those ones. And I remember making those as a kid and not being patient enough. So then you put them in the bag of powdered sugar and it just melts and gets gross because it's too hot.
Right, right.
Wait until it completely cools before you put them in the powdered sugar.
Oh, wow. All right. Well, I'll do my best to describe this now. There's so many different kinds of cakes, of course, and they can have lots of different smells. So again, I'm sticking with a very basic, almost a sheet cake, you know, that we have here in the US. But all right, let me try to describe it. So generally the smell coming out of the oven, when it's just in the oven or coming out, is very sweet and rich. It smells round and thick and even stretched, because it's stretchy, it's big, it's fat, it smells in your face, so very near. And to me, it has a purring smell, because it's purring to me means you're happy. It's a very purring, good sound. And touch-wise, it smells satiny and smooth, even a little spongy. And it has a little bit of give. Temperature-wise, it would smell warm and snug. And here again, the temperament is totally optimistic, and I would add social. Hmm. Somebody who's not only optimistic, but an extrovert, kind of very social.
Nice.
Kind of like, because most people, when they smell cookies or cake, it makes you happy. It's usually for a nice occasion. Sweets are always appreciated, right?
Yeah. And even better than smelling them is eating them.
Yes. That is true.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the next time you make your cakes or your cookies, just see it as like a warm hug almost. That's happening as it's baking in the oven. There's a warm hug radiating out of the oven.
That's great. That's a good thought. I always ask my husband, can you smell it yet?
Do you? Good.
When I make a cake or cookies. Because
you know what I like is that you're always asking those around you who, you know, you're asking them what things smell. And I think that's wonderful. You're you're curious. You're trying to connect with it. And you're actually, I wouldn't say forcing, but you're making people have to describe things. And you're getting the smellers to also have to think about their sense of smell. So thank you for that.
Yeah. Well, the cake, that doesn't mean that it's done, but it means it's getting there.
Yeah.
So I remember that. So I'm always asking, can you smell it yet? And then I know it's time to check it.
Yeah. Have your son do that too. Go.
He can smell. I'm not congenital, so.
Right, right.
But I still had a fear for some reason that he wouldn't have a functioning sense of smell, but now he smells stuff and he goes with his nose and he goes, you smell it? Very cute. And so I have to explain to him, I try to explain to him, no, mommy doesn't have a sense of smell. And you'll understand what that means later, but no, I don't smell it. So I always tell him that.
Excellent.
He just looks at me.
Oh, I love it. I love it. All right. The next one is frying bacon. This is probably one of the most popular smells out there, is the smell of frying bacon. So tell me how you experience that now.
I would say when I think about it, we have this griddle thing on our stove. So I just stand there and cook it. Mostly it's a visual and auditory experience for me, because it makes a sizzling noise. Right. I imagine it smells awesome. I remember that it smells great.
Okay.
But yeah, I will stand there and just, sometimes it'll make me sad, because again, it's sort of like the oranges?
Yes. Oranges.
It's like that, where it's more of it's a visceral experience that you know has a smell, a strong smell. And so every once in a while, I'll be bummed out because I'm like, oh, I would love to smell bacon because it's so good.
Yeah.
But for the most part, it's fine. I just enjoy the noise of the bacon.
All right. You sound like you enjoy eating it too, then.
Yeah, it tastes great. It's very fat and salty. Yeah. My parents love their bacon burned, which I think is terrible. So I think you should just cook bacon normally until it's like well done, but not burnt. But my mom and my stepdad in particular, they'll overcook it until it's, to me,
dry.
I don't like that, because it's that charred taste.
Yes.
In my mouth, that I don't like that. And I think they enjoy that, but it's gross. It gets gritty.
Okay. The reason I'm guessing, and this is just a guess, you can ask them, that they like that is people like the smell of the smokiness.
Mm.
You know, it's there's something like almost campfire-ish about that smell of smokiness. And people like that. So that's just a thought. But all right, so let me give it a try here. Frying bacon. So this would be definitely a salty smell, fatty smell, even a little bit umami. And probably an aspect of sweetness in the smell because, you know, sometimes it's like applewood bacon. It depends on the kind of bacon it is, but there's a bit of sweetness that comes through. And then that smell visually would be very deep, very thick, very, I would say, oval. It's a big smell. So it really permeates the room. I mean, a lot of people say it takes a long time to get the smell of bacon out of the kitchen. You know, it's just, it lingers. So it's very big, very wide. It's a very in-your-face, very near smell, so sound-wise. And I would call it just a hissing sound, like a to go with the sizzling. Even the smell is tied to that sound. And also touch-wise, I think it would be nuzzling, like you're nuzzling in there. Maybe a little tugging, you know, kind of pulls you in. And also touch-wise, I would just say it's a little leathery. Not that it, you know, the smell is of leather, but it's just, if you were to touch that smell, it would be a leathery, kind of smooth smell. And it also is hot and humid, temperature-wise. And temperament is just very confident, again, because it just commands the room. It takes a long time for that smell to get out of the room. And so I would say confident and diffusive.
Thank you. That's great.
Yeah, so it lingers for a long time.
Bacon smell. I usually make turkey bacon, which is definitely not as good.
That's it doesn't have as much fat. So that's where you're not getting that, a lot of that. Yeah.
It definitely doesn't, not as tasty.
It's still there though, I would say, but it's a different smell, definitely. All right. The last one is, you wanted to know about being at the ocean or seaside.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So tell me about that experience now when you go there.
I don't know whether I enjoy going to the ocean or the seaside. I was just having this conversation with my family, so I can't decide if I like it or not.
No.
And what do I mean by that? I like being there. I think it's great. There's seagulls, there's waves, the noise is nice. It's peaceful if you have your beach chair, your beach mat out and ready to go. But it's so dirty and it's so much work to get all your stuff down there. And then you get filthy and full of sand, and then you have to deal with that when you leave. So I cannot decide whether I like it, because some people are beach bums and they love to be at the beach and they really enjoy that. And I do to an extent, but the dirt, the sand being stuck everywhere is overwhelming sometimes to me.
So the annoyance of it is sort of outweighing the beauty of it, seeing the waves maybe crashing onto shore or hearing the seagulls.
Funnily enough, right? We just went to Corpus Christi and we went down to the Padre Island and we were there in the water and it was great. Part of this, I think, is me. I just needed to take the effort to go to those public wash places after, where you go up and you wash all your stuff off.
Yeah.
But I don't want to. So let me just complain, you know, I'm just here to complain. But that is the solution to the problem, is you could just go over there and rinse everything off and change your clothes.
Yeah.
But I don't want to stand in the line, get rinsed off, and then go into those public changing areas.
Yeah.
I'd rather just go get in the car and make my car dirty, I guess.
Or go to a swimming pool, then you can avoid the sand altogether.
Get their pool dirty. I think being there is peaceful, overall peaceful feeling for me. I like the sound. My son has a noise machine in his room and he likes the rain noise. So it's a similar concept. It reminds me of the waves, the water. It's a comforting sound. And as far as memories of this go, I do have a lot of memories of going to the ocean. We used to go to the Oregon coast a lot. My family is from Oregon. Both my mom and my dad grew up in Oregon and we would go visit quite often. I was actually there earlier this year, again, not at the ocean, but in Oregon. Mm-hmm. So I remember from where my parents grew up, it's an hour and 20 minutes drive to get to the ocean. And we used to go quite often and just hang out and get, is it sea salt taffy? There's a place called Moe's, I think.
Okay.
And I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but they have really good clam chowder.
Ooh.
Going to get clam chowder and biscuits and stuff. So positive memories of going to the ocean.
Okay. But no memories of what it might smell like.
Salty, warm. Salty? Mm-hmm. Yeah, like salty air.
Mm-hmm.
Warm-ish sometimes, but honestly, at the Oregon coast, cold.
Okay. Yeah.
It's not watery swimming.
No, I mean, it doesn't get any better down here in Northern California either. So you have to go to Southern California to start really enjoying the more warmer waters.
Yeah.
But all right. So I'm going to try to describe it for you because I'm not too far from the beach. I'm not right at the beach, which would have been nice, but I spend a lot of time there. And it's one of those things where I make so many associations with it because there's so many different things happening at once at the beach. There's not only, like you said, the air that comes in and out. So there's a breeze, right? So the smell changes constantly. One minute you'll whiff something fishy. The next minute it might be something seaweed that's on the beach, you know, washed up on the beach. And then it could be somebody walking by who's wearing sunscreen. It's a whole bunch of different smells, but I'm going to try to keep it very simplistic in this case. So let me give it a try. So the smell of the ocean or seaside to me is the taste, even though you're not tasting the air as such, you're smelling it. So this is why it's hard to kind of conceptualize it sometimes, but it's salty, it's gritty, a little bit umami, probably because of the fishiness. It's hard to, as smellers, we can say, oh, it smells fishy. But if you don't know what fishy smells like, I'm trying to describe it differently. So it's a little bit more of that umami smell, I guess I would describe it. Then it's also has a little bit of a metallic, visually, it's a little bit metallic, probably because of the ozone aspect of it. It's very spacious. So it's not a thick smell. It gives you room to breathe. It's spacious. It's a very long, you know, it goes far. It's somewhat sheer, depending on what's coming at you. If it's fishy, it's not as sheer. Assuming the fish smell is not there at that moment, it's sheer. It can smell a bit distant, but then it'll come in depending on the breeze and become very present. So to me, that, as far as the sound goes, that would be a chirpy smell. Then touch-wise, it's probably a little rough, kind of like wool, that woolen touch. A little wavy because, like I said, it comes in and out.
Mm-hmm.
And then temperature-wise, it smells breezy and cool, unless it's a really hot day. But still at the beach, I would argue there's always a breezy coolness that the smell also conveys. And the temperament is, again, it's very serene, but at the same time, it's complex. Really complex, that smell of the ocean. It's not a simple smell.
Okay. Yeah, not at all. That's great. Yeah, there's definitely a lot going on.
Yeah.
Ocean.
Yeah.
I didn't think about the fish smell. That's definitely something that I can remember.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, I mean, dead fish on the beach smell.
Yeah. I mean, they're there. Sadly, there's even more of it happening these days than ever before. Right. But there's all kinds of stuff that washes up on the beach. And then you got people maybe who are walking by who also have their sunscreen smell. And then, so then maybe in the back here in California, there might be a food truck even. And so there's the smell of that that weaves in and out. There's a lot of smells going on. But being at the beach or the ocean for a lot of people, like for you, you know, has good childhood memories. It's a positive thing. I would just recommend to maybe take in more of the visuals. Yes, the sand can be annoying once your feet are wet. It can get really annoying in your towel. There's always something that's bothersome.
Right.
But that visual of or hearing the waves splash onto shore, hearing the seagulls or the people even in the background. Sometimes the people become background noises too, right?
Right.
People talking on the beach. Yeah. Way to have positive experiences.
Thank you.
So let's finish off. One of the things that you had asked me about is navigating scented products in stores. So I thought we could focus on two. There's lots of different ones you can focus on, but two that you seem to connect with are, one is perfume and scented deodorants. So
yeah, I'll talk absolutely. So the store can be super overwhelming. So you go to the shampoo aisle or the candle aisle and don't really know what to pick if you're basing it off of smell. I know I always think of TJ Maxx or Ross or Marshalls. They have those really big candle areas or perfume areas, and I don't really know what to do. So I don't typically buy either perfume or candles. But I would be curious about what tips you would have for helping me pick out a perfume when I walk into TJ Maxx and I'm in that overwhelming perfume aisle knowing that I can't smell it? How would you help me navigate that aisle?
All right. So didn't know we were going specifically into a certain aisle, but let me just ask you a quick question.
Yeah.
Why does perfume even interest you? Why would you even consider wanting to wear perfume?
I think the idea of it is nice, like having a nice smell that you have on your body. I do have a couple of perfumes that I will wear randomly, but I don't know, maybe grasping for old memories.
Yeah. No, that's true, because it sounds like you used to wear perfume pretty regularly, right?
Yeah. Body spray when you're in high school.
Oh, that's true.
You know, Bath and Body Works body spray. Yeah, but it doesn't have to be a particular aisle, just in general. How would you help me pick out a perfume?
Okay, no, but that gives me an idea of, and anybody else who's listening, of, you know, the curiosity of why would somebody who can't smell anything, why would they even want to wear perfume, right?
Right.
It's
smell
it's
nice just, for others.
Yeah, okay. It's still, perfume is an accessory, if you think about it. Often people choose a certain scent to make themselves feel better. So I kind of decided, okay, for you, I would put it into three different buckets. And I'll explain what those buckets are. And I wanted to recommend a really great website for anybody who's curious about perfumes. It's called fragrantica.com.
Okay.
And I'll put it in the show notes. But this is a website that has all kinds of information about perfumes, and it subdivides it in a lot of different ways. So I just thought that could be an interesting resource for you if you are interested in perfumes and you don't want to go to every single store and or just ask people constantly. You can go to this website. They even let you register for free, so you don't have to pay anything, but they just want you to be registered, and then you can unlock some of their features that way. So I say that because we're going to put this into three buckets. One would be if you approach getting perfume from a memory perspective, like you just said. You could choose a perfume based on what you used to wear when you could smell. So it's for nostalgia, I would say.
Right.
What was the perfume again that you really loved but you would wear, or you said like a body spray?
It was the apple one from Bath and Body Works.
There you go. Okay.
Apple,
I think those still exist.
Yeah, you sent me some.
I did.
I still use that one. It was great every once in a while in the morning when I'm feeling, I don't know.
When you're feeling it.
Feeling it that day.
Yeah. So that would be a memory one. So you actually have access to that scent, which is great. So you just wear it out of nostalgia, and you might not know what it smells like now, but you're like, I remember I really loved it then, and I felt a certain way at that time.
Right.
You know, there's that youthfulness, that feeling of this. But you could also go to fragrantica.com and look at notes and look up apple and see, okay. Or you can even look up, a lot of times, I don't know if they have the body sprays there, but perfumes, you can look up, you can type in your perfume, and then it'll give you recommendations of others that are like it.
Oh, that's great.
So just to explore it a little bit. So that's from the memory nostalgia area. The next bucket I would say is, this is the internal bucket. So what I mean here is deciding on a perfume from the inside of how you feel, personifying out to others. So deciding how you want to project to others. What personality do you want to convey? It's like wearing an accessory, like a scarf or a necklace. And it sounds like that's what you're doing now. You're internally, you're saying, okay, I'm going out tonight, so I might wear this jewelry, or I might wear this scarf. So I'm going to pick a perfume based on, you'd have to go in there and look at the moods. They have colors. Just go into Fragrantica, because it's such a personal thing, but you can go through color. You can go through notes. If you remember liking things that were floral or white flowers, they give you options of different things to try. So that would be my recommendation from an internal, trying to project outwards. And lastly, the third one would be external. So letting others portray who you are. And what I mean by that is letting people in your life, whether it's your partner, maybe a sibling or a roommate, whoever you live with, let them pick something for you that they feel represents you and that they find smells really nice on you.
Ah, that's great.
So that's really using the resource of another person to help you project a smell, right? So there's the internal way, and then this is the external way.
My husband has bought me different perfumes over the years, but I still have a couple of them that I don't know what they smell, but he likes them, so I'll wear them every once in a while.
Yeah. And that's why I'd asked you, what does it mean to you really to have a perfume? So those are three different ways I thought of that you could look at how perfume could mean something to you in any way without being able to smell it.
That's great. That's good guidance to help me pick up my next one. So, my next question is about deodorant. Like we talked about this a little bit earlier when we were talking about what is it like to be smelly or sweaty on a hot day, sweaty and smelly. So what tips do you have for helping me pick out a deodorant so that I don't smell? Yeah. And then the other part of this question is, I would love to know what deodorants actually work, because I hear a lot on social media buzz that like natural deodorants don't work and you stink, so don't use them. So is that true? Because I don't know.
All right. I'm giving you a non-scientific, you know, there's no scientific answer here. I worked in that category for a while, not only from a fragrance side of things, but I actually worked on the brand Degree.
Okay.
And the Suave deodorant brand, and also Axe, the body spray. So I've been in this category for at least, I was there for at least 5 years, a while ago, obviously now. So I guess, let me ask you just a quick question. So again, kind of like with a perfume. So for you, it sounds the most important thing for you is to keep from smelling.
Is that correct? To keep from smelling bad.
Yes, bad.
I don't care. Yeah. I don't really mind if I smell like the deodorant, because sometimes I remember if you're sweaty, you can smell someone's deodorant.
Yes. So here's the thing about formulating. We're using the word deodorant generically here because there's antiperspirants,
right,
slash deodorants. They always come together, the name antiperspirant deodorant. So we used to call it APDO for short. So there's the antiperspirant and then there's the deodorant. And you had mentioned earlier, but just to remind people, so the antiperspirant is very much about stopping the sweat. So right, that mark on your t-shirts.
Right.
And the deodorant is more about masking the odor so that right, others can't smell. And that's why the antiperspirant deodorants, they try to do both. And when you're formulating, or for the majority of people, obviously, who can smell, the way it's formulated is that the scent becomes a big part of it. It's kind of like the cue to let you know that it's working. So things are formulated with the cue of the scent as a marker. That's why the deodorants or antiperspirants are often called unscented as opposed to fragrance-free.
Sure.
Meaning there's still a fragrance masker, because the base formula to keep you from sweating or to keep you from smelling bad is an awful smell. So they have to mask it. That's why there's usually called, I don't know, there might be more fragrance-free now. The market's changed a lot. I haven't spent a lot of time diving into the market lately. But just to let you know, so fragrance is a huge part of that. That's why there's so many different scented versions that you can choose from. And there's so much psychology behind being reminded. So for you who doesn't use the scent as a cue,
right?
My question would be, do you even need to use a scented product? Can you use something that's unscented, fragrance-free as an option?
Yeah. And I personally do, I don't know how I feel about the antiperspirants because they all have aluminum, right? Most of them all have aluminum. And so I've heard a lot that like aluminum is not good for you, and so you should try to avoid it. And so then I've tried the natural deodorants, which are fine, which are supposed to help you not smell, but they don't help you from stopping sweating. Yeah. So there's pros and cons to it. But yeah, I don't know. I just gravitate towards mostly, I would say, antiperspirant and deodorant, because I don't like being sweaty.
Yeah. I mean, that's what it comes down to for me. Yeah. Who wants to have, I mean, you hear all these things about aluminum, and I can't tell you that most of these companies, I'm just speaking now personally, I haven't dug deep into what aluminum itself does to a person. Obviously, just an antiperspirant, it clogs your pores, right?
Right.
Body. And it's, you know, people have all kinds of theories about it, but I don't think these companies could get away with doing it for so long, because if there's a lot of
safety,
yeah, included in coming up with a product that the mass market uses. So you have to hope it works. And it comes down to, how do you want to feel? I too have tried lots of natural deodorants and they just don't work for me.
I don't love them.
No,
I don't like
me either.
Like, who likes to be sweaty?
It's that feeling you have. So it's really a personal choice. All I can say is, if you can't smell it, is there a holy grail antiperspirant deodorant or whatever that works? There isn't, or else every single person on the planet would be using that same thing. And
right.
It comes down to the manufacturers, these brands, using scent as a way to cue, oh, it must be working. And that's a personal thing. That's just how you experience it. And unless you see the signal, you know, of the sweat under your armpits, if you don't see that, you're like, oh, it must be working that way, stopping my sweat. But do I still smell? I don't know. I can tell you that some of the most popular scents are the fresh scent and the powdery ones, typically because they have slightly stronger scent. So then people feel like, at least if they're smelly, that's counteracted by a slightly stronger scent, right? To kind of mask it.
I've used the Dove unscented one, the white unscented one, for women forever. Mm-hmm. I used that one. I don't know the name of it. I can't think of it, but it's Dove, it's white, and it's antiperspirant deodorant, and it's unscented typically.
Okay.
Now that we're having this conversation, I do find it fascinating that I tend to navigate towards unscented products, whether it's on purpose or not. I don't know. Yeah.
It makes sense. And some people use unscented or fragrance-free because they have an allergic reaction, or they don't want to have, for other reasons too. They might be able to smell, but they don't want it. So it's becoming a bigger market, but it's causing manufacturers or brands to have to reformulate a lot and rethink, because they've been in all these categories. They use scent as such a cue for efficacy or for it working.
Right.
And when you don't have that, how are you going to communicate that in different ways?
Well, the best cue would be no cue overall.
Exactly. Not noticing anything.
Exactly, because then you know it's working.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so that's how I can answer that question. It's not like a holy grail. I've got this. Here's the product that's going to work for you. It's not, unfortunately, it's not that simple.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks for the tips.
Cool. And that's really it. Is there anything else that you can think of that you want to talk about?
I mean, I think this was super comprehensive. It gave me a lot to think about. I will be replaying this episode. Back to myself. Good. So that I can, especially the shower portion, I think that will be great when I'm actually in the shower, so that I can try to experience it in a different way.
Yeah, no, that's perfect. So I've gotten a lot out of this too. As someone who can smell, it really helps me to better understand how you experience all these everyday things and how you approach it. And I hope, just from the two of us having had the conversation, we both can take these everyday mundane experiences and maybe try to get a little bit more out of them, you know, for you, right, using your other senses and then listening to the descriptors. Yeah, that's helpful too. But really, even just taking your other four senses and having a richer experience from it, not just seeing it as a, oh, I have to go through this.
Right, exactly. Trying to appreciate it in a different way.
Yeah. So thanks for joining me, Katie. Really
appreciate it. Well, thank you. Thank you for this comprehensive conversation. I love it. It's great.
Thank you for joining me on An Aromatic Life. If you're interested in learning more about your sense of smell from all different perspectives, subscribe to the podcast and invite your friends too. And it would be really helpful if you could rate the podcast so it helps others find it too. I also invite you to check out my website, smellgym.com, where you can take online classes to exercise your sense of smell for health and well-being. And while you're there, be sure to grab the free guide to help you elevate your smell health with everyday items in your home. Until next time, remember to smell everything and have a wonderful day.